If you have ever flown into London, I did originally type, you know when you fly into London? And then I thought, well, that might be a bit presumptuous, like, hey-ho, here I am flying about all the time. Whereas the reality is, I've always bought the cheapy discount flight that meant I had to get up at 4:30 a.m. and therefore didn't sleep at all the night before in case I missed the alarm. And actually, it ended up costing me more to get to the airport at an ungodly hour and then pour overpriced coffee down myself than it would have done just to buy a sensibly timed flight in the first place. But anyway. So, if you've ever flown into London, you'll know that they often have to put you in a holding pattern where you circle about waiting for a landing slot. And I never usually mind it. I like seeing the vast expanse of the huge city below me. That unfathomable number of people busying away. The idea that every single one of them is full of hopes and dreams and disappointments. Street after street after street. Millions and millions of souls and dreams. I always find it pleasingly mind-boggling. And if you had been hovering over London on this particular day in early spring, then beneath you, you would have seen the massive, endless sprawl. The surprising amount of green space clustered in the west, where it looks as if you could walk clear across the city through its parks and on to the clustered, smoky east, the streets and spaces becoming ever more congested, the wheel along the river glinting in the early morning sun, the ships moving up and down the sometimes dirty, sometimes gleaming water, and the great glass towers that seem to have sprung up without anyone asking for them, as London changes in front of your eyes. Past the Millennium Dome, getting lower now, and there's the shining point of Canary Wharf, once the highest skyscraper in the country, with its train station that stops in the middle of the building, something that must have seemed pretty awesome in about 1988. But let's imagine you could carry on, could zoom down like a living Google Maps in which you don't only go and look at your own house. Or that might just be me. If you carry on down further, it would pretty soon stop looking so serene, less as if you were surveying it like a god in the sky, and you'd start to notice how crowded everything is and how grubby it all looks and how many people are shoving past each other even now when it's not long past 7 a.m, exhausted-looking cleaners who've just finished their dawn shifts trudging home in the opposite direction to the eager-suited and booted young men and women. Office jockeys and retail staff and mobile phone fixers and Uber drivers and window cleaners and big issue sellers and the many, many men wearing high-vis vests who do mysterious things with traffic cones. And we're nearly at ground level now, whizzing round corners, following the path of the Docklands Light Railway, with its passengers trying to hold their own against the early morning crush because there is no way around it. You have to stick your elbows out, otherwise you won't get a place. Might not even get to stand. The idea of possibly getting a seat stops miles back at Galleon's Reach, but you might just get a corner place to stand that isn't pressed up against somebody's armpit, the carriage thick with coffee and hungover breath and halitosis, and the sense that everyone has been somehow ripped from their beds too soon, that even the watery sunlight tilting over the horizon in this early spring isn't entirely convinced about it. But tough. Because the great machine of London is already in waiting, hungry, always hungry to swallow you up, squeeze everything it can out of you, and send you back to do the entire thing in reverse. And there is Flora Mackenzie, with her elbows out, waiting to get on the little driverless train that will take her into the absurd spaghetti chaos of Bank Station. You can see her. She's just stepping on. Her hair is a strange colour. Very, very pale. Not blonde, and not red exactly, and kind of possibly strawberry blonde, but more faded than that. It's almost not a colour at all. And she is ever so slightly too tall. And her skin is pale as milk, and her eyes are a watery colour, and it's sometimes quite difficult to tell exactly what colour they are. And there she is, her bag and her briefcase tight by her side, wearing a mac that she's not sure is too light or too heavy for the day. At this moment in time, and still pretty early in the morning, Flora Mackenzie isn't thinking about whether she's happy or sad, although that is shortly going to become very, very important.